time is 6 o'clock. Time for Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert.
Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And wonderfully there at that website are also podcasts to prior shows that we've done. You simply go to the link for local programming, look up Your Financial Choices, and peruse the available catalog there for prior shows. Today is January 10th, 2018. The markets were pretty flat today. The Dow closing at 25,369, the NASDAQ at 71.53, and the S&P at 27.48. We're talking about tax reform tonight. And while tax reform for the most part applies to 2018, I think it's important that we talk about a few of the provisions so that you can get a head start on some financial planning strategies that you might be able to implement in light of the tax reform and how it might impact you, a few things you might want to be aware of. And I'll touch on some 2017 aspects as well if we need to go there. And depending on how much time I have, we are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information. We ask that you mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you could still ask questions off topic. I will do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And questions can also be emailed to the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So let's talk about tax reform. And first, I'm going to run through a list of just highlights because for 2018, some things that might pique your interest and you might say, oh, does that apply to me? And what's the impact? And what might, you know, I need to do? So I'm going to talk about some of those highlights. And then I'm going to do a deeper dive into those things that I've highlighted to try to give you some perspective around it. And in doing so, I am going to be referring to an article by Michael Kitsis, K-I-T-C-S. He's one of our leading kind of, leaders in, understanding and delving through tax reform complicated information. But what I like about him is he puts it in such an understandable format, which is really great. So he has a website at kitsis.com, K-I-T-C-S.com. But his article is the final GOP tax plan summary, tax strategies under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. So let me just run through this little list. And that is tax reform for, there were two parts to it. I'm not in a million years am I going to be able to cover everything. And I also tell folks this is somewhat high level too, because it's just not burned into my brain yet at this point. The frustration's burned into my brain, but the tax law is not burned into my brain yet. Hopefully, you know, as we go through this and the more I attend seminars and read, and I'll start to know it off the top of my head. It's not always comfortable for me not knowing things off the top of my head. So I try to give a little disclaimer there. But one thing to keep in mind is the two parts is there was corporate tax relief and individual tax relief. And the corporate tax relief, I'm not going to talk about tonight, but the corporate tax relief was reducing the corporate tax rate from 35 to 21%. So the idea there is there may be businesses or business people who may think, gosh, should I change my entity classification? Should I rethink how I'm doing business? So that's a complicated subject, not one I'm going to cover tonight. I might be able to touch a little bit on qualified business income deduction that might be available for pass-through entities, including Schedule Cs, but we'll see if I can get to that. But for the most part, I'm going to talk about some of the differences for individuals and what has changed from 2017. Keeping in mind that the tax reform for individuals was not made permanent, it sunsets after 2025. So we have 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. We have 8 years of this. Then it sunsets. You know, as we've learned over the years, tax laws can change, you know, more often than that. It's set to sunset. It doesn't mean it's not going to change again in 8 years, but it could. But for sure, it's sunsetting in 2025. I think we went through this with George Bush. There was some sunsetting provisions too. And you know, we had gone through a couple of years where, you know, they were putting through patches and, oh, it was just a bit of a mess. I hope we don't have to continue to go through that or, you know, have laws that are set up this way to make it complicated. But the reason they had the sunset is because, you know, they have to review where we are with the debt and the spending and all of that. So basically, the other thing I want to mention is quite often in seminars I've gone to and have attended just in the last week or so, a couple of weeks, they're talking about what was proposed in the House, what was proposed in the Senate, and how it finally settled. I'm not going to take the time to talk about what was proposed one way or the other. I had almost memorized the House, and that completely changed, and it looks much more like what the Senate had come up with. Bottom line, we just have to talk about what we are dealing with now. It doesn't even matter what was proposed anymore, except that if you also thought you learned what it was supposed to be, and you misunderstand something, or it seems different now, it's because it, you know, the conference came up with some different law than what was originally proposed in either the House or the Senate. So one thing, we were supposed to be going towards simplification. I think for a lot of people, it's going to be more complicated. For tax preparers and planners, it could be a lot more planning to do for some folks. Basically, we were trying to go reduce the tax brackets. That didn't happen. We still have 7 tax brackets. They remain. It's just at lower tax rates. So they lowered the tax rates, especially at the top. I think a lot of people will save some income tax. Some people will pay income tax. And some people, while they might save income tax, there are people who will save, you know, a lot more income tax too, depending on what tax bracket you're talking about, what income level. So 7 tax brackets remain, but they are, they did lower the rates. There was something called the PEAS limitations. That was if your adjusted gross income was over a certain threshold, some of your itemized deductions were reduced. So, you know, it was kind of a little extra tax hit to you. They've repealed that. So for people who had, because of high income, had their itemized deductions limited before, they've removed that. Keeping in mind, they've also reduced a bunch of the deductions we used to get on Schedule A. So as I go through this list, you know, while they repealed one thing, might not make a difference for you because you might not be itemizing. Alternative minimum tax was something they were going to eliminate. They didn't. It remains. But again, because they removed so many of the deductions from Schedule A that were considered preference items for alternative minimum tax, meaning when you figure out your tax on a regular basis, and then you had to figure out your taxes on an alternative basis, and that alternative basis said, hey, we're going to have the same income, but let's add back some of those deductions we let you have. And now we're not going to let you have those deductions. So while they didn't repeal AMT, alternative minimum tax, because they removed so many of those preference item deductions, it might not have much of an impact on people who might be subject to it again. Folks, we have a list I'm running through, and then we're going to dive deep after we come, you know, as we go through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2018, WDIY is celebrating 23 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about tax reform tonight. If you have questions, I'm happy to take live callers. Love talking to folks. Love hearing your questions. It helps us all learn more. If you have the question, somebody else probably has the question. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can dial the same number and talk to Lori C. She's in the studio. She'll take down your question. And if it's live, we'll put you through. If it's a question you're not comfortable talking live on air, give it to Lori. She'll write it down, and I'll answer it as soon as I can. And that number to call is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So let me do the punch list of things that I think were kind of stood out that we're going to have with tax reform. And then I want to dive a little deeper into it and talk about what that might mean, what some of these might mean for you, and a few things that you might want to plan for early in 2018. So I talked about alternative minimum tax. Well, they did retain it. It's not going to have as big of an impact because they've eliminated so many of the deductions anyway. So there's not as many preference items. Kitty tax. So kitty tax, when you have and I don't even remember the ages off the top of my head because they've changed the ages over the years. But if you have a dependent child, I think under 24 or a child 19 or under, the kitty tax, and that was just me saying that off the top of my head. I'd have to give you specific numbers if you really wanted to know. If you have children who have earned income, there's still a standard deduction for them to the extent of the limitation plus the earned income. But if they have investment income, then there is a cap on that investment income that they can use that deduction for. I think you can have about $2,100 of unearned income as a child. If it goes over that, then typically in 2017, there's something called the kitty tax, and they make you recalculate the tax based on the parents' income tax rates. For 2018, it's no longer going to be calculated at the parents' tax rates. It will be calculated at the estate and trust tax rates. Who came up with this? I have no idea. But the estate and trust tax rates are pretty high. So there could be a chance that your child, if they are subject to the kitty tax, if they do have unearned income, substantial unearned income, typically maybe they get maybe a distribution from a trust or something like that, or, they inherited something from a parent, they may be subject to this kitty tax at higher rates in 2018. So if your kids have unearned income of over $2,100, you might want to look at some planning around that. So I can talk about that more later as we go. One of the things that has happened too, the Tax Act doubled the standard deduction for single and married filing joint. So they doubled the standard deduction, but they eliminated the personal exemptions. So by doubling the standard deduction, a lot of people were really thrilled about that and happy. And wow, that's great. They're doubling the standard deduction. Maybe I don't have to itemize anymore. That does make it maybe a little bit simpler in your tax filing. What they might not factor in is they also eliminated the personal exemptions. So you may you know, see, feel that or not. It depends. With the lower income tax rates, maybe you won't feel it as much, but if you don't have personal exemptions anymore, not sure how that works. You want to kind of maybe when you're doing your 2017 tax return, have your accountant or yourself run it through your software to see what 2018 is going to look like. And do you have to withhold more or are you going to be okay? Does it wash out? So they are doubling the standard deduction, but they've eliminated the personal exemptions. So some people will may or may not feel that. For people who have a lot of children, the concern was, gosh, if I had five kids, six kids, four kids, and I really benefited from the personal exemptions that I'm not going to have anymore, boy, that could sound troubling. But they expanded the child tax credit. So there is a child tax credit. Now, I think they were trying to get it for older kids, but I think they kept it for only under 17. So if you have 16-year-olds or under, they expanded the child tax credit to $2,000. So that's a $2,000 income tax credit. So that's a dollar for dollar offset from your income taxes. And they raised the phase out thresholds. That is probably one of the biggest things I see in this tax reform for people who have kids. They raised the income threshold. So we're going to see a lot of folks who in the past maybe could not take the child tax credit because their income was too high. They raised it substantially. I'll talk about that in a little bit. They doubled the federal estate tax exemption. So for people who had estates of about, what was it getting up to? About $5.5 million of assets. If they were over $5.5 million, basically rounding, they would have a federal estate tax. They have doubled that. So the federal estate tax exemption is now $11,200,000 per person. If you're married filing joint, that's $22,400,000. You will can avoid the federal estate tax, which is at about 40% over those exemption amounts. Schedule A, itemized deductions. Remember, I said that they've eliminated quite a few of them. And one of them is the miscellaneous itemized deduction. A lot of people didn't get that anyway. If you had alternative minimum tax, you didn't get it anyway. So sometimes there are certain deductions that while they eliminated them, a lot of people didn't get them. For the people who did get them, that's something to watch for. So if you were someone who did benefit from miscellaneous itemized deductions in any big way, that could be folks who are employees who have unreimbursed employee business expenses, tax preparation fees, investment advisory fees that you're paying out of pocket. Those are miscellaneous itemized deductions that are no longer allowed. So for the folks who either didn't have them, didn't benefit from them, their limitation, you know, they didn't get them because of limitations or because you had alternative minimum tax, no big deal. You didn't get them anyway. But for the folks who really benefited from them, that might be something you're going to have to really keep your eye on for 2018 and how that would impact you. So some of those, the miscellaneous itemized deductions are eliminated. There's some other limitations too, which I'll get into as we talk through the show. But this is just, again, high level. It's taken me 20 minutes just to give you the high level stuff. Something called the repeal of the Roth recharacterization. So for folks who converted money from an IRA to a Roth, if they did that in 2016, they converted money from an IRA to a Roth in 2016, and let's say the market tanked and they thought, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have converted that because when you convert, you pay income tax on it. Oh, gosh, I shouldn't have converted. You had until the extension due date to change your mind. You could put it back in the IRA and say, I never did it and, you know, avoid the tax on that conversion. Well, they've repealed the ability to recharacterize. We call that a recharacterization. They repealed that. The big question was, what about for people who did it in 2017? They've repealed this ability to recharacterize. What happens if the market tanks in the next few months and I made that big Roth conversion in 2017? Now that they've repealed it, can I recharacterize it or is that repealed? Well, what I've read is that you can still, for those 2017 conversions, you still have the ability to recharacterize those. So put that on your calendar to watch out through the extension due date, October 15th of 2018. If something changes in the market and you think, gosh, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to convert, you still have the ability to recharacterize. Folks, we're looking at some highlights of tax reform and what might you need to pay attention to for 2018 while you have time to get ready. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She answers the phone, and she can jot that down for you and bring the question into the studio for me. And we are talking about tax reform. So I'm running through a punch list, and I lied when I said I'm doing it in 20 minutes because I actually have more on the punch list to talk about before I dive a little deeper into these. So I mentioned right before the break about the repeal of Roth recharacterization. So for 2018 conversions, if you convert money from an IRA to a Roth IRA, you better make sure it's a good sound decision because you can't change your mind. In the past, it was like a no-brainer if it made sense from a tax standpoint and a planning tax point. Be like, well, yeah, I can change my mind. I have this much time to change my mind. That's going to be gone for 2018 conversions moving forward, at least until this sun sets after 2025. Personal exemptions, I mentioned. Additional the standard deduction, I mentioned it doubles. A lot of people have asked, well, what happens, you know, if I'm over 65? Because there was a little extra deduction if you were over 65. And also for folks who are blind, we don't see that as much, but it's an extra little bit extra deduction on the standard deduction for that. So there is still the additional standard deduction for blind and over 65. That still applies. There is going to be a cap on mortgage interest to $750,000 of debt. So in the past, it was $1 million but we also got $100,000 of home equity. They are repealing the deduction for home equity debt, but there's all kinds of caveats here. This is what it's so confusing. And allowing the mortgage interest deduction up to $750,000 of debt. So some of the caveats I can dive into as we go, but real quick for those folks who are just listening on their ride home. If you already have a mortgage, then it's still the old rules. If you already have the line of credit, that is going to get repealed. But then there's like these little asterisks, you know, in my mind that they go into further explanation about a home equity line of credit, or you have to follow the use of it. So if you used it for home acquisition, even though it's called home equity, if you used it for acquisition to build onto your home and improve your home, that's considered acquisition debt. That may still qualify. This is where I'm kind of getting confused. This is what it sounds like I'm reading. So you may still be able to deduct it, but for going forward, the home equity, I don't believe, is going to be deductible in normal. But the mortgages, if you already had the mortgage before these dates, which again, I'll dive into a little bit deeper, you're going to follow under the old rules. For new people, for new mortgages, if you have a $1 million mortgage, your mortgage interest deduction will be limited to the amount applicable to $750,000 of debt. So it would be 75% of that. Not a lot of us have to worry about that, but that is one of the new rules. They also were looking to eliminate mortgage interest deductions on a second home. They were only going to allow it on a primary mortgage, but I believe they retained that, that if you have a second home, I think you can still take that. Here's something for 2017, which no one was expecting, because I actually was doing planning with clients, telling them that they were going to eliminate the medical deduction possibly, or in 2018, the house was looking to eliminate it. And we also had a 10% medical threshold limitation. So you have to, if your medical expenses were $10,000 and you had $100,000 of income on page one, the limitation says you can't take more in medical expenses than 10% of your page one income. So if my page one income was $100,000 times 10%, my limitation's 10. If my medical expenses were 10, I didn't get any deduction. Well, if my medical expenses in that case were 15, the limitation was 10, I would get to put $5,000 of deductible medical expense on my Schedule A as part of my itemized deductions. If my itemized deductions didn't add up to more than my standard deduction, even with that, I would still take the standard deduction. But if that medical plus my real estate taxes, my state and local income taxes, my mortgage interest, my charitable contributions, my miscellaneous itemized deductions, those all added up, then I would itemize. Well, what they did in this tax act, they not only kept the medical expense deduction, which they were first talking about getting rid of, they kept it, but they also changed the limitation back to the old limitation, which was 7.5%. So now for people for 2017, if you had medical expenses, the limitation is only 7.5% of your page one income, not 10%. So that will help give an extra deduction to those folks who benefit from itemizing and benefit from taking medical deductions. You might want to get back out and look at those receipts and add that up. And again, it only makes sense if you otherwise would itemize deductions anyway. So that 7.5% is going to be enforced for 2017 and 2018. But then in 2019, it goes back to 10%. Okay. So for 2018, a lot of people might not itemize anyway. So you really were at an advantage if you kind of took care of a lot of your medical expenses, if you were someone who would otherwise benefit from this in 2017. So that's what we were working with a lot of clients on. Student loans. I wanted to mention this, and I'm actually going to kind of go into this just a tiny bit extra in case someone's listening and they don't listen to the end, because that's probably about the time I would get back to this. And that is student loans. Let me see what Michael had said about this. If I can get it off the top of my head. Student loans. If someone dies or becomes disabled and still hold student loans, they will be forgiven at death or disability if they're federal student loans. That's federal student loans. So what made me think about this being like really maybe something you have to pay attention to is I've been seeing a lot of commercials recently about consolidating your student loan debt. And the commercials say, consolidate your student loan debt, your federal loans and your private loans. Boy, do they want you to consolidate before you hear about this. Depending on what kind of rates you have on your federal loans, tread carefully. Because I had, I'm aware of a case where there was $170,000 of student loans and someone passed away. And those would be forgiven without any issue. That becomes more of a item, I think, when we have married filing joiner couples and people who sign for things. So just be careful, tread carefully. Folks, we're at the halfway point. I haven't even started diving into this stuff. lots and lots of information. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Questions on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about tax reform. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert right here on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM. And WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Your Lehigh Valley weather, currently it's 40 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low near 30. Tomorrow, Thursday, cloudy, high near 50. Light rain moving in late afternoon. And then tomorrow night, rain, mainly after 10 p.m. with a low around 45. The rain will be heavy at times. And Friday, rain again heavy, high near 62. Fog's going to roll in, so make sure you're careful out there for your weekend. Now we return to Lori Siebert and Your Financial Choices.
Thank you, Norm, and thanks for being here tonight with us. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about tax reform. A couple last few items to hit on this punch list. I mentioned student loans. Be careful. And 529s. They expanded the use of 529s to K through 12 private schools. So private schools could be, you know, parochial or what do you call the other thing? Secular. Private schools, 529s. You can take a distribution from a 529 to pay tuition at a private school up to $10,000 per child per year. I had heard a seminar that I swore they had said, you know, lifetime. And I thought, well, that wasn't such a great benefit, but it is per year. So $10,000 per child per year that you can make a withdrawal out of a 529. Where that, I think, would be interesting or applicable for people in particular would be folks who maybe front-loaded 529s. They started funding them when the kids were, you know, first born, and they've grown and grown and grown, and now they're, you know, through the roof, and they're never going to use all that money for college, but they're in their sophomore year at, you know, a local private school, private high school. You could use the $10,000 toward that. That could work out pretty well. And when you take that distribution out of the 529, why 529s are attractive is, first of all, for Pennsylvania, you get a deduction on your tax return with certain limitations. But any of the earnings and growth on that 529 are not income taxable when taken and withdrawn for qualified education expenses. So they've expanded what qualified education expenses are. It could be, you know, a good way to use up some overfunded 529s. Where I think it's, you know, not as attractive is, it's not that it's attractive, but when you're saving for 529 for college, you have like 18 years from the time the kid is born, right? Well, when you're talking about private schools, if you're sending your child to first grade, you know, you're not letting that money grow as long if you're funding it at birth and then you have till, you know, kindergarten, first grade, all of a sudden it only really was there to grow for a few years. So keep in mind, sometimes you might have 529s where you have, you know, an older child on the account, and maybe you could change the beneficiary to a younger child. You could do that in part. So that's the strategy you want to look at to see if you have multiple children. Does it make sense to maybe carve off some of that money from one child's 529 to another child if there is some private school K through 12 that you need to cover as well, and you have plenty of money in the other child's 529. Some people might not realize the flexibility in changing the beneficiaries on a 529. All right, let me quickly kind of run through some of the highlights that I kind of touched on. the tax brackets. We still have seven, but they lowered the tax rates. The highest rate is now 37% instead of 39.6%. And the brackets, basically, the tax rates 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, 37. One of the rubs here, which was kind of funny, and I hope that they're going to fix it, although maybe it's not as complicated as it seems. But there's a special capital gains tax rate. And the capital gains tax rate applies to long-term capital gains and sometimes capital gain distributions from your mutual funds and qualified dividends. So the capital gains tax rate is zero to the extent you're in the 15% tax bracket, and 15% if you're over the 15% tax bracket. Well, there is no 15% tax bracket anymore. Why they didn't fix that is beyond me. So they may put in little patches here and there to kind of fix these odd things. It's just easier for people to get their head around these changes in the tax brackets if they line up. So maybe they'll say to the extent you're in the 12% bracket, maybe they'll change it for that, because that 12% bracket might be, let me see, in that 15% bracket, it's kind of hard to see. I can't really line it up. It might not be as off, but hopefully they'll fix that. It's much easier for us as tax preparers to say, oh, you know, here's the 15% bracket, here's, you know, where your capital gains rate is. But now without the 15% bracket, could be a little bit more confusing. What else do we have? So the tax brackets have changed. In some of the calculations I've done for folks where I'm looking at the 2018 rates, I am seeing tax savings for a number of people. It really is those folks who had itemized deductions that benefited from itemized deductions and had big miscellaneous deductions in state and local tax that they're not going to have anymore. So that's your flag to go see what might apply to you. There is something they call the marriage penalty. So generally what I think they've tried to do in the past with lining up the tax brackets is to say, you know, if I'm a single person versus married, if I'm married, are my, you know, does it make sense for us to get married, or am I going to pay more taxes? And at one time, married people paid more taxes based on the tax brackets than a single person did. And so then they tried to rectify that and avoid the marriage penalty by kind of fixing the tax brackets. Well, now it's back a little bit. So for example, I believe the 37% tax bracket for married filing joint starts at $600,000, but the 37% tax bracket for a single person is at $500,000. So you single people get a little bit more benefit if there's two of you making $500,000. I think they said the hit overall would be like an $8,000 tax difference for the people who are making those top bracket income levels. I also want to mention the Medicare surtax was something that they were hoping to get rid of. The Medicare surtax, net investment income tax. The net investment income tax is 3.8 on investment income. That still is going to apply for people who are making over $200,000 individual and $250,000 married filing joint. And I believe the wage tax is still there. That's 0.9% above those same thresholds. What else do we have here? The estate and trust tax brackets. Remember I told you the KIDI tax is going to apply at the estate and trust tax rates. Well, the tax brackets for estates and trust, if they are with $2,550, it's 10%. So if your child, remember I said the KIDI tax would apply, I think, on income over unearned income, not earned income, unearned income, which is basically investment income, over $2,100 could be subject to these estate and trust tax rates. Well, the first $2,550 of estate and trust income is taxed at 10%. From $2,550 to $9,150, it's at 24%. So you see how high they go so fast. Up to $12,500, the bracket is 35%, and anything over $12,500, it's at 37. So if you have maybe a child who's the beneficiary of a trust, and maybe they pay out an IRA and that income flows to your child, now you're talking some serious possible income tax on that net, unearned income. So watch out for that if you are subject to that. What else do we have here? I'm just kind of flipping through some of the things that change. Remember, I mentioned that if you're blind and over 65, you get an extra standard deduction. So that's $1,250. So if there's two of you who are over age 65, the standard deduction was doubled. So it's going to be $24,000 in 2018. And if you're over 65 and you're married, that would be an extra $2,500 deduction. So now you're looking at $26,500 for a standard deduction. Remember, those personal exemptions are gone, though, now. And chances are you might not be itemizing. So you want to make sure you're running through that and looking to see what's going to apply to you. The expanded child tax credit. Here is the big one. The big one for people who are higher income, because a lot of folks may have already been qualifying for a child tax credit. They did expand it. It used to, what was the old amount? Can't remember off the top of my head, but now it's $2,000 and it was $1,000. It was $1,000 per qualifying child in the past. Now it's up to $2,000 and part of it could be refundable. So if your child tax credits wipe out your income tax, there is a $1,400 refundable portion to that. And that's for those whose net tax liabilities would be more than zeroed out by that credit. Now, here is the big, big thing. The income phase out rules, and this is from Michael Kitch's article, The Tax Strategies Under the TCJA 2017 Act. The income for the phase out rules for child tax credits are dramatically increased from the current thresholds of $75,000 for individuals and $110,000 for married couples, up to $200,000 for individuals and $400,000 for married couples. So folks who had $110,000 of income before would get phased out for the child tax credit. Now it's $400,000. That's a huge difference. At a $2,000 tax credit, that's a huge difference. That's where I'm going to see a lot of folks saving a lot of extra money. We have a call on line one. We have Carolyn from Salersburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you for calling in, giving me a break from talking nonstop. How can I help you?
I have a question about funding my retirement. I can either put it in a Roth or a 401k, which mm-hmm. I'm doing both right now, but I want to increase it.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, should I split the increase, go to the Roth, go to the 401k? Like, is that going to would that have changed with the new tax law?
It might change. Depending on what your tax situation is for 2018, you'll want to review that to see how these new tax brackets might impact you, because we generally like to see folks defer money on a pre-tax basis into their 401k. That means they're getting a deduction. They're not paying tax on it today. Pre-tax basis, we like to see that when you're in a higher income tax bracket. And sometimes you can do that and do the Roth at the same time, depending on how much income someone might have available, what cash flow might be available. They might be able to do both. Get the Roth 401k money deferred and do a Roth IRA. It all depends on your income, you know, page one income. If you have to pick one or the other, generally what I tell folks is if you're in a low income tax bracket and expect to be in a high income tax bracket in the future, I love the Roth, because you don't need the income tax deduction then if you're in a very low income tax bracket and you think you're going to be in a higher one in the future. So if you could do both, it's great. I love Roth IRAs. Almost can't go a show without talking about Roth IRAs. So if you can do it, it's great. But if you think at a time later, like after you retire, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket than you are while you're working, then you want to do the deferral.
Okay. For myself, I would not really expect any change, I believe, at least at this point.
Yeah. So if you're going to be kind of in the same tax bracket, it almost doesn't matter which one you do. So you kind of hedging your bets. You could do a little bit of both. the benefit of the Roth is getting it in there now, get the tax-free growth going. And what I like about that is it gives you options in the future that if you have to pull money from a retirement account, when you pull money out of the retirement account, it is going to be income taxable. At some point, you're going to have Social Security when you retire, and more income on your return might cause more of your Social Security to be taxed. So that Roth does give you some flexibility and options. So something to look at tax time.
Okay. Can I ask you one more real quick question?
Well, we have a break coming up, but go ahead. If you want, you can ask the questions and I'll answer.
I'll ask Lori C. That's fine.
No. Ask me the question now, then we'll go to break and I'll answer it when I'm back.
Okay. You were talking about the medical expenses, the deductions, but if you put money in an FSA, the flexible spending account, that's totally out of the equation.
Correct.
Because that's already pre-tax.
Very good, and I'll expound upon that more when I come back from the break, but that was an excellent question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carolyn. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we're up at our last break. Phone number is 610-758-8810. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Phone number is 610-758-8810. Carolyn brought up a good question before we went to our last break when we were talking about medical deductions and what you can take if you are eligible to itemize, number one, and then if you're over the limitation for medical deductions, number two, which is now going to be 7.5% of your page one income. But what deductions qualify for that when you're adding them up to see if you would benefit? And basically, there are any out-of-pocket expenses on an after-tax basis. So Carolyn had asked about flexible spending. A flexible spending account is a way that we can put away money through payroll deduction into a special account that we then use to pay those bills. And we're not taxed on that money when we do it through payroll. It's really a great, great benefit. I really like flexible spending accounts. It's a use it or lose it thing. So a lot of people are afraid to do it because they think, well, what if I don't have the medical expenses to offset that amount I've put away? Well, you try to plan for it. You say, okay, typically, you know, this kid's going to have braces, or I'm going to have these copays, or I'm going to have these, these crowns put in. So you want to plan for it. You usually do it at open enrollment in the fall with your employer and plan for the next year. A lot of people don't realize you also can have a change in situation. Maybe you have a child now that you didn't have before. You can change if you have a change in circumstance. Maybe a spouse loses their job and, you know, you don't have the child care anymore. Or maybe you have a child and now you do have child care. So you want to check those out too. But you can't take a deduction for things that you've already gotten a tax benefit from. We have a call on line one. We have David. Hi, David. How can I help you?
Yeah. Explain to me again in the simplest terms, what is the benefit of saving money in an IRA? Because I was told way back when it was first invented that you put money in, save it up, tax deferred, and then when you withdraw or redeem, when you pass 59.5, it's at a much lower tax rate. I'm thinking that might not be true, though, because the laws are changing all the time.
Right.
So help me out on what is the great deal of IRAs.
Yeah, David, that's a great question, because you know what? That's what we started to see over the years. So back in the day when IRAs first came out, it was always about deferral, deferral, deferral. And the tax rates were much, much higher that long ago. Now, when I first started doing tax returns, gosh, I think it was in 1985, and the deduction for an IRA was like $2,000. It was especially helpful for people who didn't have another way to save for retirement. So what happens is deferral, deferral, deferral became such a mantra that so many people started deferring as much as they could, either through the individual retirement accounts. If they didn't have an account at work, they would take a deduction on their tax return for the amount they put in their IRA, subject to the limitations. Or a lot of people started putting tons of money away in their employer plan, their 401k, their 403b. So there was all this deferral, deferral, thinking we're in really high tax brackets while we're working, and when we retire, we're going to be in really low tax brackets. Well, what's happened over the years, what's evolved is Social Security didn't used to be taxable. Now Social Security might be taxable depending on how much other income you have in your return. The retirement accounts, people did such a great job at saving, they now have huge, gigantic IRAs or 401ks that they're now required to take money out. And when they take that money out, they're putting it on their tax return, and now their Social Security is taxable. They maybe have done a much better job investing, and now they have all this other income. So, David, the idea of deferral has always typically generally been a good one. It could work for some people. What we see sometimes, David, is a window, an opportunity to maybe take money out of IRAs and convert it to a Roth IRA when we're in low tax brackets, which might be that period of time when we retire prior to taking Social Security or prior to taking a pension. So sometimes we still look for windows where people are in low tax brackets. But basically, if you're always in the same tax bracket, and I'm sure there's cases
isn't
where...
Isn't the same thing happening that you just described?
Mm-hmm.
The 401ks also.
Right. So a lot of people
Well, then is it better to just put money under your mattress?
No, not necessarily. You really have to do projections to see where you are and where you're going to be. And
but then the things change, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh, yeah, what we told you then, sorry, it doesn't count no more.
Right.
And then
well, which is why one of the reasons that, you know, if you listen to the show regularly, why I love Roth IRAs so much, there's a couple ideas there. Is quite often when people are really young, they're making less money. That would be a great time to put money into a Roth IRA and get some of those tax-free investments going. And the beauty of those is you can always take out the original contribution. So you have to kind of maybe... you know, leverage your options and your strategies, do a little bit of both. So I too, David, realized what you did many, many years ago. And when I was doing financial planning for folks, I would say, you know, not necessarily a great idea to defer all of your money, because maybe you might need some of it for emergencies, for house repairs. And then the other problem was people would put so much in their retirement account that when they needed it, they were taking ineligible withdrawals and paying taxes and 10% penalties. So you have to kind of do some planning, and it's different for each person's situation. So never listen to blanket advice. Which is why I start every show saying this is general education, and you need to talk to your advisor for information specific to yourself.
Well, I got that advice from my financial advisor. I think he's retired now.
to put it away or to not, to put it under your mattress? Which did your advisor tell you to do?
The whole thing about, oh yeah, IRAs are great. You should probably keep putting money in there, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, a balanced approach, just like in everything else we do in life, a balanced approach is probably the best way. But to each person's situation, you got to review it. But thank you for the call, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a good, important. Have a good one.
Okay.
Yes. So to his point, very good for each person to figure out what works best for them for their situation. All right, what else? So that home equity thing, I want to go back to that, because in Michael Kitch's article, I felt like I was a little confused. He does say the final GOP tax plan did retain the decision to eliminate the deductibility for any home equity indebtedness altogether and without any grandfathering for existing home equity indebtedness. After 2017, interest on home equity indebtedness simply will no longer be deductible, period. So if you have a home equity, not deductible, period. But he goes on to say, though it's important to know that home equity indebtedness is not based on whether the loan is actually a home equity loan or home equity line of credit. Instead, the determination of home equity indebtedness versus acquisition indebtedness is based on how the mortgage proceeds are used. He said, thus, a HELOC that is used to build an expansion on a house is still treated as acquisition indebtedness. So, folks, I am telling you, this stuff could be so confusing. It's probably best to make sure that you know when you have a home equity loan, what was it used for? When did you get it? When did you take it out? We have to start paying attention to the dates of the mortgages. I think if you look at your 1098s, they do include that now, and they're certainly going to have to include it more. So I know that there was this big push to eliminate, compliance and regulations and all of that. There is going to be a lot more that I believe banks are going to have to keep track of in order for the IRS to know what equity and, indebtedness is going to apply, acquisition indebtedness, what does the mortgage look like, how much is it for. So there is going to be a lot more to track. So you're just going to want to have to make sure that you're keeping all your paperwork that might have to do with any kind of loans, buying homes, that kind of thing. I think they were going to try to change the principal residence exclusion if you sell your home and the gain, but they didn't change that either. As far as I could tell, it's still 2 out of the last 5 years you can own your home and not have to recognize any gain on that. So we talked about the 529 plans, that you can use some of that for education. Remember I said the itemized deduction Schedule A, so medical, they've kept the 7.5% limitation versus the 10 for 2017 and 2018, back to 10% limitation in 2019. The state and local taxes and property taxes, they capped that. They were talking about eliminating it. They capped it to 10,000. You could still take the mortgage interest for prior mortgages for sure. For 2018 and forward, it's up to $750,000 of indebtedness. We can still take charitable contributions. Miscellaneous itemized deductions are gone. Now, what happens is when someone adds up their mortgage interest and the $10,000 on the real estate taxes or state and local taxes and their charitable contributions, if those are less than $24,000, that's the standard deduction, you're not going to be itemizing. All right? So you want to plan for that. One of the things we talked about with clients in the past might be someone's close to itemizing. We would hopscotch deductions. So 1 year we might have high medical and high charitable. The next year we don't. The next year high medical, high charitable. The next year we don't. Well, that hopscotching, you could still do something to that degree if it's charitable contributions that are going to help throw you over the standard deduction limitation. One other thing about these, the exemptions for the children. Remember, I said there's no more exemptions, but there's this child tax credit that they've increased to $2,000. That phase out increased so much. So a lot of people who are higher income, who in the past lost the child tax credit, might get it now, up to $400,000 of page one income. They also added a new rule to include a new $500 non-refundable credit for dependents who are not qualifying children, meaning a qualifying child is one that's under 17. So maybe you have a college student at home, 20, 21, up in their bedroom playing music all the time. So a college day student, they're in college, they're your dependent, but they did not qualify for the child tax credit. There is this $500 non-refundable dependent credit that may apply, and it could apply to a parent as well. So that is something for 2018 you might want to look at. Folks, there's so much changing, so many details and nuances behind all of this. It's going to take us a while, months and months, to kind of run through it all and actually kind of get our arms around it. So please you know, stay tuned to your financial choices as we go through, well, always, but especially through the next several months. During tax season, we will talk about a lot of tax rules and tax information to help you get through and get your tax returns filed. So that will be in upcoming shows. Next week, I am going to talk about Roth IRA updates. Yes, Lori just woohooed in the next room because she knows it's my favorite subject. So we'll dedicate the hour to talking about Roth IRAs, cover some of those questions that we even had tonight. What are the pros and cons and what do you need to pay attention to? I wanted to thank Norm for being here. Lori, thanks for being here. Callers, thanks so much for calling in. It's my favorite part of the show is when I have people call in and ask questions. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.
You've been listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. We are Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Have a great evening. Look forward to hearing Tom's show.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Donald Trump reiterated today any compromise on immigration must include money for his proposed border wall. NPR's Scott Horsley reports Trump spoke at a White House news conference after a meeting with the Prime Minister of Norway.
Republican and Democratic lawmakers are trying to strike a deal that would give a permanent reprieve from deportation to young immigrants who came to the country as children. Trump said Tuesday he'll go along with whatever those lawmakers agree on. But in a White House news conference, he made it clear the deal must include money for his controversial border wall.
Any solution has to include the wall because without the wall, it all doesn't work.
Congressional Democrats say they support stepped-up border security, but they argue a wall is not the best way to achieve that. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. immigration agents began raiding dozens of 7